But first, Kevin Allison. Kevin is a comedian, writer, and actor. He's also the man behind the hit podcast, Risk. The show's tagline is, true stories people never thought they'd dare to share. But many people have taken the risk and shared their most intimate secrets, including Kevin himself.
I used to be on this sketch comedy show on MTV called The State in the early 90s, and it was so much fun. It was very early success. But as soon as the group broke up and we lost our TV show in 1996, I spent 12 years just not knowing how to build a solo career. I would go out on stage and play kooky, crazy characters, and no one ever seemed to respond to these characters I was doing.
Why wouldn't they respond? Were they too kooky, too crazy?
Well, no. What it ultimately was that I think my pieces were a little bit too artful, a little bit too written, a little bit like... authenticity of some sort or another was somehow not breaking through. People thought my stuff was funny, but for some reason it wasn't hitting a vein. So it was Michael Ian Black, who was also a former member of my sketch comedy group, The State. He came to see one of my solo shows in 2009. And afterwards he said, you know, I feel like the audience just really wanted you to drop the mask. Just stop the acting and get up on stage and tell your own true stories. And I said, oh, God, that sounds so scary to me. I said, there's too many parts of my personality that are complex. You know, like, I'm so gay, and yet I'm also so Midwestern and polite, and yet I can be really absurdist and sometimes really kinky. It's just, I said, it feels too risky to be me up on stage. And he said, that is the idea. If it feels risky, then you're probably really opening up and saying something authentic, and an audience is likely to open up to you. So that was the week that I decided, okay, I'm going to get up on stage and tell a really risky story, a true story, as myself, and see what happens.
What Michael Ian Black told you, it was really life-changing, wasn't it?
It really was. And you know what's fascinating when I look back? I remember he used to say things like that to me way back when we were even on MTV. One of the things that I've learned as a storyteller, when you go back and start reconstructing specific incidents that had a real emotional impact on you in your life, you start to realize, oh, I've been relearning some of the same lessons over and over again. So really, it was the first time I heard it, not the first time I'd been told.
Tell me what you did with Michael Ian Black's advice.
There was a theater in New York. Well, it's still there, but it's changed locations. The UCB Theater in New York City. They were putting on a show where people were telling stories about their sex lives, and it was called Stripped Stories. And my friend Margot Lightman was hosting the show. I had never seen a true storytelling show before, but I had gotten this advice from Michael, so I decided to contact Margot, and I said, listen, I want to tell a really risky story, so maybe I can tell the story about the time that I unsuccessfully tried prostituting myself when I was 23 years old before The State ever got our TV deal. And she said, oh, my God, that sounds great. But on the day of the show, a couple days later, I called her and I said, I have to back out. I'm terrified. This just seems too risky. She said, that's great news. I said, what? She said, oh, my God, on the day of the show, because these are stories about people's sex lives, people often, like, freak out the day of the show and say, oh, this is too personal. This is revealing too much. I feel like it's too risky. And she says, if I can convince that person to do the show anyway, to face their fear and just do it, that is the story that's going to knock it out of the park that night. So she convinced me. And I got up and told that true story. It was Friday, the rent was due on Monday. And he said to me, Kev, I'll tell you something. A lot of people don't realize this, but prostitution can be fun.
I said, To tell you the truth, the whole time I'd been living with him, I wasn't sure where he was getting the rent. Well, any other roommate might have suggested to you, hey, Kev, you might ask your parents for a loan. But he already knew that my parents had already said to me, Kevin, we can't possibly give you yet another month's rent.
And it was terrifying. Like, I went from moment to moment in the story having all those inner critic voices in my head saying things like, oh, you sound so gay right now, or, ooh, you probably sound really Midwestern right now, you know, like all this stuff that doesn't matter. And the audience just kept leaning more forward because I was just being myself. And I realized, oh my gosh, there is an emotional connection that I'm having with this room tonight that I haven't had on stage since I don't know when or ever. And so I was really shook that night. I walked away from, you know, I was used to people after shows saying to me, hey, that was funny. But now I was having people come up to me and say, gosh, I've never been through an experience like what you described, but the emotions you described were so familiar to me. And oh my God, that triggered a memory of a fight I got into with my dad and mom when I was in the seventh grade or whatever it is. When you tell a true story, if you're really tapping into the most revealing thoughts and feelings you had in an intense moment in your life, it's bound to open up and trigger associations for other people that are just as meaningful for them, even if they've never been through anything like what you just described. So my walk down 8th Avenue after leaving the UCB theater that night was really a transformational walk, because during that walk, the whole show risk started to occur to me. I said, listen, I've been hearing this word risk from Michael Ian Black and then from Margot, and this is it. I think I've tapped into something here. I realized that there were shows where people did tell true stories, like The Moth or in a more journalistic way, This American Life. But I also realized, oh my gosh, there's this new format, podcasting, where you don't have to censor yourself at all. It doesn't have to be family friendly. You can talk about anything. So I knew there must be a niche that I could fill to create a podcast where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share in public. And these stories can be hilarious, they can be horrifying, they can be beautiful and tear-jerking, as long as the person is going outside their comfort zone and speaking with the raw, real honesty that they would normally speak to their therapist with, for example.
That's a great motto. Risk is the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share.
People responded to it immediately. That was another thing. As soon as I had this idea, I started pitching it around to friends. People were like, oh my gosh, I get that. I want to see that show. I want to hear that show. I realized that it had to be both a live show and a podcast because I had been dealing with stage fright for the past 12 years. I was very spotty about being able to feel like I could get up on stage. So I was like, I've got to beat this thing by forcing myself to get up on stage on a regular basis. Plus, I had already experienced that thing where when you're really opening up in front of an audience, there's an electricity in that room. So I knew it had to be a live show, but I also knew it had to be a podcast, because that's how to reach a much, much, much wider audience. Plus, we do these radio-style stories. So it's not all just stories told live on stage. There are some stories where a person comes to my apartment and just sits down with me and one-on-one shares a story with me, and then we cut me out of it and add music and sound design. So it's a whole audio experience.
You've collected 37 stories from the Risk podcast into this book, which is appropriately called Risk, and you had over 350 episodes worth of stories to choose from. How difficult was it to decide which stories to include?
Oh my gosh, it was so hard. I listened to every episode of Risk to do kind of an inventory and finally take a look back at it all. And I narrowed, the first list I made was 600 possible stories. And then I kept narrowing and narrowing and narrowing. And it's interesting because we finished that book and the very first thing we said was, oh my gosh, I hope we can do another one. Because, you know, there's like so many stories that we didn't include in the book that we think are just as good as everything that's in the book. So, yeah, we've got a lot of material, and
it makes me think of that Jaws line, we're going to need a bigger boat. If you have 600 stories, you're going to need a bigger book.
Exactly, exactly. I think we could do a whole series.
A whole bunch of volumes. We could have them lined up like the Encyclopedia Britannica, 26 volumes. Can you identify one of the stories in the book as being the quintessential Risk story? I know that's a tough question.
Oh, you know, there's a story in the book about a guy. He went to a Jesuit high school, so he had a really good upbringing. His family was well enough off and, you know, all that sort of thing. But he started selling drugs in high school. And amazingly enough, he ended up being so proficient at that that he ended up moving down to Mexico and working for a major drug cartel. And at one point, he made a mistake deciding to work with some new, whatever you would call them, client or something like that, and lost, I think, like $150,000 of whatever drug merchandise they had. So he was kidnapped by this drug cartel.
Almost 40 days into this, and I just couldn't live this way anymore. Literally like an animal tied up, being fed once a day, peeing in a milk gallon that had the top cut out, had not brushed my teeth, had not washed my face, had not taken a shower. I remember I got to one point to where I would look down on my nails and I wanted to cut my nails, I wanted to peel my nails. And something in my mind said, well, if I am gonna wind up dead somewhere, at least, and if they can identify my body, maybe the forensics people can identify the DNA in my nails. So I remember peeling all my nails and putting them in the pocket of my jeans.
Finally, they did, in fact, just let him go. They did, in fact, just want to prove a lesson to him. But it was a life-changing experience for him because he found God, actually, in the process of living through all of that and realized just how much his family did, in fact, love him because they sold everything they had to give ransom money to the drug cartel. It's just one of those stories which is horrifying and brutal, and at times your jaw drops like, oh, I can't believe this is real and that I'm hearing this. In the end of the story, he shares about telling this story to his children, you know, to show them how much he loves them and the life that they've built together as kind of opposed to the man he used to be. So it's those kind of stories that are so surprising, and yet when you hear them, you walk away feeling like, gosh, okay, I really got something out of that person's experience. I lived vicariously a little bit there, and that gives me hope.
Kevin Allison is the host and creator of the podcast Risk. He's hosting a live show in Madison, Wisconsin tonight. You can find out more about Kevin and the show on our website, wpr.org/beta.
Almost everything that we report is legitimate and true, and there are real problems, but the lie that's built into the coverage is that you can do anything about it.
Journalist Matt Taibbi joins us to talk about how the news is a consumer product designed to keep us awake at night in a constant state of panic. That's just ahead. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.